Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, with school out for the summer and just in time for one of the busiest driving weeks of the year, Project Yellow Light is spreading the word about the deadly dangers of distracted driving. Also this morning, finding the balance between protecting the environment and protecting the economy. A new report puts Ohio's conservation efforts in the middle of the pack compared to other states. But is that necessarily a bad thing? And we have a collection of 4th of July favorites from Kyrie's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, June 28th, 2024. First of all, full disclosure, I have to say that I did not watch the entire debate last night on CNN between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. I watched about the first 15 minutes of it, and that was about as much as I could stomach. At that point, I said, this is a complete mess. I'm not watching this. It is kind of interesting. I saw on the Today in History calendar this morning that it was on this day in 1836, the fourth U.S. president, James Madison, died in Montpelier, Virginia, which I thought is ironic because last night the 45th and 46th U.S. presidents both died on a stage in Atlanta. So that was the first thing that came to mind. So the first presidential debate of 2024 was unlike anything we have seen before. President Biden stumbled. It says here in the write-up, the news stories recapping the debate, it says President Biden stumbled at times during the night. He pretty much stumbled through the entire night, sparking more concerns over his age and his ability to take on Donald Trump in November. Meanwhile, Trump, for his part, seemed to try and deflect his actions during the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. He ignored some questions. He dismissed accusations about his affair with porn star Stormy Daniels. And there were other times when he presented what are demonstrably flat-out falsehoods. Both candidates hurled personal insults at one another and accused each other of being the worst president in U.S. history. Jabs over age, and the debate at one point even devolved into a challenge to a golf match. Now, that happened long after I was gone. I did not see that part, but apparently Donald Trump challenged Joe Biden to a golf match at one point during the debate. And it's like a friend of mine and I were talking a couple of days ago, and he said 300 million people in the country, and these are the best two that we could come up with for the office of president. And it just goes to demonstrate what I've long said, that the best person for the job, whoever that may be, probably is smart enough not to want it. What can you say? What can you say? It was just an absolute. I'm not sure that. I mean, clearly, when the dust settles, Donald Trump won the debate. I mean, but he didn't so much win it for his performance as he won it by default based on Joe Biden's just abysmal performance last night. So I don't know what you make out of the whole thing. I guess, and this I didn't see either, but Vice President Kamala Harris tried to defend and spin the Biden performance in an interview on CNN after the debate with Anderson Cooper. But basically, like I said, I didn't see it, but from the write-ups, it appears that she may have actually made the mess even worse. And so I wonder if this actually puts more pressure, even more pressure, on Donald Trump to pick a real winner, knock it out of the park with his selection for his running mate. How closely will you be paying attention to whoever is nominated, whoever Trump picks to nominate as his vice president. So I don't know. That's the aftermath of the debate last night, in case you missed it. You didn't miss much, basically, although everybody's going to be talking about it today. This is another item that I saw on the Newswire, and I want to bring this up in all seriousness here this morning. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Officials in Utah say seven members of a church youth group are in the hospital because of a lightning strike. Sheriff's office in Sevier County, I believe it is, says a large group of children were hiking in central Utah yesterday afternoon when lightning struck the wet ground beside them. 50 of the youth members were shocked when the lightning hit. Seven had to be taken to the hospital because of medical concerns. Now, the good news is that they're all expected to recover. None of the injuries are life-threatening, but that's just by the grace of God. Maybe it's because they were a church group. But this is the reason why, when there are outdoor activities, you know, in the summertime, sports events, or, you know, really anything going on out of doors, and lightning is in the area, and they say, take shelter, this is why. This is what can happen. So please take that seriously. I can't tell you how many times I've seen it happen where kids and grown adults don't want to take that seriously when lightning is in the area. You got to. This is another demonstration of why that is so important. So what else is going on in the world? Some of the most interesting and buzzwords. We are now less than a week before the big day on July 4th, which, of course, as everyone knows, we celebrate on July 4th the birthday, the anniversary of the Caesar salad. That's what it's all about, right? On July 4th, the anniversary of the Caesar salad. That's right. On this July 4th, as a matter of fact, it is a very significant historical milestone. It is the 100th anniversary of the Caesar salad, the invention of the Caesar salad on July 4th. It was invented, now in case you didn't know this, the Caesar salad is truly a global dish, a global delicacy, if you will. It was invented by an Italian chef in Mexico on an Italian chef who lived in Mexico who was on holiday in America at the time, Cesar Cardini. Cesar Cardini, who lived in San Diego, and I had it the other way around. He lived in San Diego, opened a restaurant in Tijuana, and while running low on supplies over the weekend of July 4th, Caesar threw together what he had left, put it over lettuce, and made it tableside, inventing the Caesar salad that we enjoy worldwide today. So, truly a global dish by an Italian chef living in America who was opening a restaurant in Mexico. That is, I didn't get any more. So if you need a reason to celebrate on July 4th, as if America's birthday isn't enough, the birthday of the Caesar salad. Big stuff there. Let's see. I did not know that. It's very interesting. Speaking of interesting factoids, I saw this on the Business Wire this morning. According to the National Association of Home Builders, the typical new home built in the U.S. today is distinctly smaller than those built a decade ago. Our houses are shrinking. The typical buyer today wants a home that is just over 2,000 square feet, according to the NAR. New homes have been shrinking since 2015, when the average home size peaked at 2,600 square feet. And today, people want just a hair over 2,000 square feet. Maybe they theorize it's a reaction perhaps to high prices, because obviously a larger home means it costs more to maintain and run that home and furnish that home and, you know, all of the other things that go along with a larger space. Or maybe home buyers today are asking for smaller homes because they simply want a smaller space. Changing demographics also, experts say, play a role. Nearly 30% of recent home buyers in the U.S. are single as opposed to families, so they don't need as much space. According to the National Association of Realtors, interesting. Homes are shrinking these days. Who knew? Let's see. Big news here. The process has started to move two giant pandas from China to the San Diego Zoo. The pandas are coming. The San Diego mayor, Todd Gloria, took part in the farewell ceremony for the two pandas in China. And Yun Chuan and Sing Bao have now started the process of moving to San Diego. Those are the names of the pandas. Once they do get to San Diego, it will be several weeks before they will be on display for visitors to see. They need time to get used to their new surroundings. Dr. Megan Owen, the San Diego Zoo, says the new panda habitat that they have created for the pandas is 4 to 5 times larger than the last one from 5 years ago when they had to return the pandas that they had at that time. So they have given them much more space. So Americans are looking for smaller homes, but the pandas are getting a much bigger one, as it turns out. It's kind of interesting. And speaking of China, this is maybe the best news that you will hear today. Maybe the best news you will hear this month, this year, perhaps even in your lifetime if you are a coffee drinker. Researchers in China have found a link between coffee, mortality rate, and sitting. And it's not necessarily what you might think. They say drinking a cup of coffee could help those who sit for long periods live longer. This is not what you thought, right? I mean, when you first see the link between coffee, sitting, and mortality rate, you think, oh, yeah, they're going to say if you drink coffee and you sit too much, you're going to die early. No, quite the opposite. Data analyzed from over 10,000 Americans. Interesting, it's Chinese researchers looking at Americans in this, but it says data analyzed from over 10,000 Americans found that those who sat more than 8 hours a day had a 46% higher risk of mortality. However, those who drank at least 2 cups of coffee a day saw that mortality risk slashed by 33%. Cuts it by a third. The researchers write, and I am quoting here, given that coffee is a complex compound, further research is needed to explore this miracle. But I think, if you're a coffee lover, you have all the information you need to know right now. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
This is ONN. I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. The city of Cincinnati declared an emergency near the music hall last night. Police say a suspect in a Cincinnati stabbing incident was seen driving near the iconic cultural venue as they were debuting the opera La Traviata to a full house. Outside the music hall, the suspect stopped, got out of his vehicle, and pointed a firearm at police. After refusing to surrender his weapon, he was shot and killed by police. Identities have not been released. Street closures remain in effect. The incident is under investigation. Columbus Mayor Andrew Ginther says starting today, there will be a significant increase in police patrol in the popular Short North neighborhood after a shooting left 10 people injured last weekend. Doug Petcash of ONN affiliate WBNS-TV has more.
The patrol will take place between midnight and 4:30 a.m. and will focus on certain areas such as parking lots and garages.
You will notice the significant increase in police presence.
Authorities will be enforcing a city curfew for teenagers.
Last night, marked the first debate between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. President Biden, who reportedly was suffering from a cold, had issues at the beginning of the debate, which have renewed questions about his age and mental acuity. Former President Trump was called into question for falsehoods and inaccuracies. While Biden and Trump are only 3 years apart in age, a Gallup poll this month suggests there is more age concern about Biden than Trump. The next debate is September 10th. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Well, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, in 2022, the last year for which there are complete statistics available, there were 3,308 people killed and an estimated additional 289,000 people injured in motor vehicle traffic crashes involving distracted drivers. With school out for the summer and just in time for one of the busiest driving weeks of the year, the Ad Council and Project Yellow Light have announced the winners of their annual Project Yellow Light Scholarship Competition. And joining us with more is the co-founder of Project Yellow Light, Julie Garner. Julie, tell us about the Project Yellow Light itself and the inspiration behind this the creation of this contest here.
Well, this is a national scholarship competition for high school and college students. So we have two levels to the competition. And we invite the students to create a PSA, public service ad, that encourages safe driving, focusing on avoiding using your cell phone while driving. And, you know, we are empowering these young people to use their talent and their creativity to speak up and speak peer-to-peer. For the contest actually has three components as well. So we have a video competition, a radio competition, and a billboard competition. So they have all sorts of opportunities to spread the word to not drive distracted.
And this was actually inspired by the scholarship competition, inspired by a young man who was one of those victims that we talked about.
Yes, it's a passion project for me. My son, Hunter, was tragically killed at the age of 16 due to a car crash. And so, you know, for my own survival, one of the first things we did was to set up this project to keep his name alive and to keep his memory alive. And we also wanted to just protect all of his friends because we found out that car crashes were such a leading cause of death of our youth. And it just blew me away. And typically at this age, it's due to a distraction, which is totally preventable.
Yeah.
So that is how we got started in Hunter's High School. And a few years in, we got tapped by the Ad Council, and we went from one high school overnight literally to a national competition. And we're reaching thousands of young people each year.
So what is the criteria that you use to judge the submissions? Because as you mentioned, these come in from all over the country.
Yeah, you know, we find that the simplest messaging is typically the best. We tell the young people that they can create whatever they choose as long as it's in good taste. They can use humor. It can be animated if it's in a video. They can be serious. We also kind of guide them to think about it in the simplest terms, as if they're speaking directly to their best friend who they want to keep safe. And that's kind of how we go about it. And then what we see are, you know, things all over the gamut. And typically the ones that rise to the top are those that are just simple, clear messages.
I would imagine on one level, it's got to be really fulfilling to see so many of these entries come in, knowing that, you know, for every one of those entries that comes in, that means the message has been reached to that individual and hopefully their circle of friends as well. Not to mention, you know, even before you go out and put that message out there for everyone to hear and see.
Yeah, you could have said it better because that's so true. I think that everybody who takes part is a winner because they are having an impact on their little circle of influence, because it's like an education to themselves and perhaps to their peers or their siblings or whomever, that this is a phenomenon that we've got to do something about. And so we are reaching thousands. And, you know, not only because the winner's work is aired or displayed across the country, which is pretty amazing for a young person.
Yeah.
But also, like you said, that each person who takes part, whether they win or not, they're a winner in my book because they are doing something and they're educating themselves and having an impact and perhaps saving a life.
Let me ask you kind of your perspective on this. Obviously, this is very personal to you. This is something you are very passionate about. And obviously, the target audience here for this project is young people, but anyone who's ever been on a road just about anywhere knows that teen drivers aren't the only ones who aren't paying attention to the road. Why is this so hard?
It's just a phenomenon out there, and you see it a mile away if somebody's on their phone. I think we all think we're invincible when it comes to that, and you have that Pavlov dog kind of reaction when you get a ping or a text or what have you. And, my focus is on our youngest drivers and having them help us find a solution to one of their leading causes of death. And once we get them to get that message out, then maybe they can educate us adults as well and get us to drive a little more cautiously, too.
That being said, it's sort of like the message we hear when it comes to buckling our seatbelts or, any other good practice, good driving practice. Kids are going to learn those behaviors from the grownups. So, again, we want to teach our kids not to drive distracted. We've got to model that behavior ourselves.
So true. But, it's interesting you bring up the seatbelt situation because I would say 99% of us wear our seatbelts now, mm-hmm. when that wasn't always the case. So it's, after a while, it's a learned behavior. Just like, a couple of decades ago, everybody smoked in public or on a plane or whatever.
Right.
And if you were to light up a cigarette in a movie theater now, it would be the peer pressure of everybody in that theater that would boo you out of there. And that's what we're trying to do with these young people, is to give them that kind of impact to each other to say, this is stupid. Don't do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. From your lips to God's ears, as they say. Again, Julie Garner is the co-founder of Project Yellow Light. Where do folks get more information on the winning projects that we mentioned? You just announced these scholarship winners. And also, you've got more information on education surrounding this issue.
Yes, everything you need to know about this project is contained on our website, projectyellowlight.com. So you can educate yourself about the statistics. You can enter the contest there, which is opened up every year annually in October, and you can eventually see the winner's work each year as well.
Again, this is one of those things that we know what we need to do. We know what we should be doing. Now we just have to do it. And Julie Garner with us this morning, Project Yellow Light. Julie, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for helping us spread this message.
Well, we all have fond memories of summer days spent at our favorite fishing spot or hanging out at the local swimming hole. We may long for those simpler times, but today might not even be possible. Nearly half of our rivers and streams and one-third of America's lakes are unsafe due directly or indirectly to human pollution. This week, the nonprofit organization Smile Hub released a report on the best states for environmental protection in 2024. And joining us is Smile Hub business manager Luke Powers. Luke, first off, what are the criteria that you use to rank the best states for environmental protection? What are you looking at here?
Okay, so just to give you a brief overview here, Smile Hub compared the 50 states across three key dimensions: environmental protection, energy consumption and waste disposal, and emission and pollution contributions. And we evaluated those dimensions using 23 relevant metrics.
Such as, give us some, we can't run through all 23, obviously,
sure.
But such as what? Give us some examples here.
Sure. So, share of state land designated for parks and wildlife, number of state conservation programs and initiatives, vulnerability to climate change, energy efficiency, soil quality, share of population served by community water systems with a serious drinking water violation, and plenty of others.
So at the top of the list are the states that you could actually probably guess: California, New York, Washington State. And then at the other end, West Virginia, Louisiana, and Mississippi are at their very bottom, which is also probably not all that surprising. Ohio ranks somewhere in the middle in your report, right?
Correct. Ohio ranked 29th overall in environmental friendliness.
I would take that to mean that there are some areas where you feel that we are doing well in the Buckeye State and some where we need improvement. So first off, what are some of the positives that you find in Ohio?
So when you look at Ohio, their environmental strengths include a high rank in state conservation programs. They rank sixth. Minimal vulnerability to climate change. They're tied for first with a few other states, and strong soil quality in ninth. And they also perform well in daily water consumption, ranking 11th, and fluorinated greenhouse gas emissions, ranking 9th.
So then conversely, what are some of the shortcomings? What can and should we be doing better?
I'll give this to you in two parts. First, I'll read some of the weaker areas and then some of the ways to improve.
Mm-hmm.
Where Ohio faces significant weaknesses are areas such as share of state land designated for parks and wildlife, 42nd, energy efficiency, 43rd, share of renewable energy consumption, 46th, water efficiency and sustainability, 39th, landfill waste per capita, 46th, median air quality index, ranking 41st, and industrial toxins per square mile, ranking 45th. Now, there are ways to improve this, right? One would be increasing renewable energy consumption, because ranking 46th in renewable energy consumption shows that Ohio has room to improve and invest in and promote the use of renewable energy sources. Two would be enhancing energy efficiency. They rank 43rd in energy efficiency, so implementing more stringent energy saving measures and incentives for both residents and businesses can improve that. Reducing landfill waste would come third there. Again, 46th in total tonnage of landfill waste per capita. So enhancing recycling programs, waste reduction incentives, that sort of thing will help address this issue. Four would be expanding green transportation, you know, improving public transportation and encouraging eco-friendly commuting. And then fifth, the last one on our list here would be mitigating emissions and pollution. So the industrial toxins and air quality index that I mentioned previously, with stricter regulations on industrial emissions and initiatives to improve air quality, Ohio can improve.
Now, I'm going to play something of a devil's advocate here. Couldn't one argue that in the middle of this list is right where we want to be? Those states at the top of the list, we mentioned California, New York, Washington State, no surprise that those are also some of the states with the heaviest tax burdens and regressive economies, the most regulatory burdens for both businesses and individuals. Isn't the middle of the list kind of the sweet spot, if you will, between economic and environmental considerations?
That's interesting. It's maybe not something that I have the perfect expertise to speak on, but I can see where you're coming from here. Definitely, if we were to talk about Ohio trying to get to the top of the list, then you might face some of those similar issues that you see in California, New York, Washington. So I think you do have a point, but nonetheless, improving some of these things, keeping the environment a little healthier, might, as you said in the very beginning, help people enjoy some of those summer days out on the lake, the river,
yeah,
that kind of thing, which I think we can all agree is beneficial.
Well, and in fairness, it is also true that clean and healthy lakes and rivers provide an economic benefit to communities that rely heavily on those activities like boating and fishing, recreation, tourism, and so on. And we do have quite a few of those in Ohio. So there is an economic impact from that standpoint as well. I am also curious. I mean, again, when you look at the entirety of the list, top to bottom, and Ohio being somewhere in the middle, is the gap between where Ohio is and the top of the list, how wide is that gap as compared to where Ohio is in the bottom of the list? I mean, in other words, are is the top half of the list all clustered very close, and then, you know, the bottom of the list kind of spread out? Or how fine is that line between number one and number 20?
So it is interesting here. When we do these, we score the states out of a total score of 100. Mm-hmm. So that's the max you can get. Zero would be the lowest.
Right.
California being first has a total score of 80.07, whereas Ohio in 29th has a score of 51.45, and Mississippi ranking 50th has 28.89. So there's a slightly larger gap between number one and number 29 than number 29 and 50. But everything is generally a few points apart. And even, let's say, making it to 20, there's only a 6-point difference between Ohio in 29th and Michigan in 20th.
That's kind of what I was getting to there. To make incremental improvements doesn't necessarily, from the sounds of things, mean wholesale changes to make what could be substantial improvements, according to your report.
Exactly. In anything, especially something as large scale as environmental protection, those incremental changes over time will add up.
Again, Smile Hub business manager Luke Powers is with us this morning and talking about their report out this week on the best states for environmental protection in 2024. If folks are interested in digging into some of the numbers, and again, we kind of scraped the surface on some of the top numbers here, but you have a lot more in-depth information, I'm assuming, on your website?
For sure. If you want to see the full list as well as the exact methodology that we use to rank everything on environmental protection, you can go to smilehub.org.
Worth checking out. Interesting stuff there. Luke Powers, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Hopes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Detroit woman by the name of Denise Ezell is suing the MGM Grand Casino there in the Motor City after she says she won $127,000 playing the progressive blackjack game back in October, and the casino refused to pay. Now, that's it. You know that casinos don't like paying out big jackpots. You know, I mean, who likes giving up, you know, a lot of money? You know, they don't want to if they don't have to. But they refused to pay her $127,000 jackpot. The casino claims that she had been banned from the casino back in 2015 when she was caught trespassing and panhandling on the property. I guess she wouldn't have to panhandle anymore if she won $127,000. She claims that she was actually arguing with one of her cousins and that the whole thing was just a giant misunderstanding. The casino, though, says, nope, she was banned back in 2015. We ain't paying. She was supposed to be there. The casino has not commented on the lawsuit. Wow. 127 grand. Let's see. But that's not the worst. I mean, you could say that's one of those you're having a bad day kind of stories. You know, you're having a bad day when you win $127,000, but then the casino refuses to pay. That's a bad day. But this is worse. This is worse. Happened in Connecticut Tuesday evening when a toppled manure truck caused quite a stink for an entire neighborhood. The smelly car. Now, we've had stories about overturned trucks full of various things clogging up highways. But in this case, the smelly cargo rained down on a group of homes in the Pomfret neighborhood after the truck rolled over and struck a car. All of a sudden, Ann Bettard, who lives, one of the homeowners in the neighborhood, says, all of a sudden, we see the sewer come out of the truck, and then the whole thing was coming out on top, and it was the exact cause of the crash still under investigation. Provost Trucking will help clean up the mess. Fortunately, the driver of the truck sustained only minor injuries, but wow, toppled manure truck. It's one thing spread manure all over the highway, manure truck, but throughout an entire neighborhood. That's when you know you're having a bad day, right there. That's a bad day. Elsewhere in the broken news, some of the odd and unusual side of the headlines. A fortune teller in Florida has been arrested for allegedly using her services as a ruse to rob people. What? You're telling me that the fortune teller is a fake? That the fortune teller can't actually read your fortune? I'm shocked. Carola Mitchell is facing charges including robbery and kidnapping after reportedly stealing $12,000 from a potential customer in Ruskin, Florida last month. She is being accused of visiting the victim's home and pulling out a gun once she was let inside. Investigators say Mitchell used her psychic services as a ploy to gain entry into the victim's homes. You could have seen that coming, but I'm bummed. Sorry. From the international file, a Chinese national studying in Japan got a less than enthusiastic welcome when she was charged for driving a suitcase without a license in Osaka. Driving a suitcase without a license was the charge. Apparently, the woman was caught riding the suitcase, which had an electric motor capable of reaching speeds of up to 8 miles per hour on a city sidewalk. And that was what put her in trouble with the law. She was driving her electric suitcase. I've actually seen these things, these electric suitcases. That you can, you know, they're wheeled suitcases, like a regular wheeled suitcase, but you can actually sit on them, and they have a small electric motor that will propel them. I've never actually seen one in person, but I've seen videos of these things. Apparently, she had one of these, but she was driving on the sidewalk. The charge, it says here, is the first of its kind, and the woman is fighting it on the grounds that she doesn't consider the suitcase a vehicle. And therefore, she doesn't need a license. She is driving without a license is the charge. It is a long shot, but she might have a case because driving laws in Japan regarding scooters, electric bicycles, and things like that are actually pretty vague. And this would fall into that category, according to legal experts. So, in any case, it's a lot of baggage for somebody's new in town to have to deal with. A lot to unpack in that story. Ba-dum-bum. I'm just full of bad puns today. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. There's another one. What is that, a quote from Shakespeare? Something is rotten. I think it's from Hamlet. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. Here's the story. The nation of Denmark plans to tax livestock farmers for the greenhouse gases emitted by their cows, sheep, and pigs when they let one rip. They're actually fining the livestock for farting. Farting fines. Beginning in 2030, so this is not like it starts right away. Beginning in 2030, Danish livestock farmers will be taxed $43 per ton of carbon dioxide equivalent. By 2035, that tax will increase to $108, this is according to a report in the Associated Press. The aim, according to the taxation minister in Denmark, is to reduce Danish greenhouse gas emissions by 70% from the levels in 1990. By the time 2030 rolls around, they want to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by 70%. They figure taxing farting livestock is the key. The Associated Press reports that although carbon dioxide tends to get most of the blame for climate change, methane traps about 87 times more heat on a 20-year timescale, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. So Methane is dangerous, but taxing farting livestock. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. And finally, in the broken news this morning, picture this. You are summoned to a nursing home to transport a deceased resident to the morgue when all of a sudden, the body starts to make noise. That is exactly what happened to one poor driver who was called to move a woman when he arrived at the funeral home in Pittsburgh, the Shadyside Nursing Home. A woman was wrapped in a sheet, not a body bag, and they got her in the transport vehicle, the ambulance or the hearse or what have you. And the woman started to make noise and move around. And they tried, that would give you the willies, wouldn't it, if you were the driver? I think I would quit my job right at that point. I don't think I would go back for the next day. The woman was returned to the nursing facility and apparently will be okay. As for who was at fault, local news reporters did some investigating and finds that transport companies are not responsible for checking a person's status. That is typically left up to the medical staff at the facility. But I don't know, whoever they pin this on, I got to think somebody's going to lose their job once they sort it all out. Don't you think? I mean, somebody's got to lose their job over this, I would think. There you go. That is today's broken news report. That's crazy stuff. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information.
This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download. The numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. And this is very relevant because with the 4th of July approaching, a lot of us will be hosting a gathering, family and friends coming over for a cookout, what have you. And so you're going to have to clean the house, right? A new survey of 2,000 adults commissioned by Swiffer finds that 60% of adults in relationships say that they equally share cleaning duties, from doing the dishes, the laundry, sweeping, dusting, all of that. 60% say that they share things equally. Specifically, breaking it down, 51% say their partner helps with the laundry, 50% say their partner does the dishes, 46% say their partner runs the vacuum, sweeps. Those are the top three. And maybe that number should be even higher. 69% of Americans say seeing their partner clean is a turn-on. 67% of the 2,000 adults in the poll say they are more likely to get fresh themselves with someone if they had a clean, fresh-smelling home. So if you're dating, take note of this. And if you're not in a committed relationship, there is still a big upside here. 82% say they are likely to clean before bringing a date home. 68% consider an unclean and smelly home to be a deal breaker in a relationship. 43% say that they would cut a date short if the date's home was unclean. And one third would go so far as to end a relationship for the same reason. So don't be a slob is basically what they're saying here. If you are dating someone, 65% would think twice about moving in with a partner who had poor cleaning habits. So again, demonstrate that you are tidy. Overall, 79% of people. And this is both the singles and those in a relationship. 79% of people say how clean someone keeps their home affects how they view that person. So that's, you're being judged by whether or not you're claiming. That doesn't mean it has to necessarily be spotless, you know, no speck of dust anywhere, just tidy, you know. And more from the survey, again, commissioned by Swiffer, so kind of interesting there. 69%, as we said, said seeing their partner clean is a turn-on. 17% of young adults in the survey said that they would prefer the gift of a clean house. If you've got a birthday coming up or something, you need to buy something for someone, hire them a maid. 17% say that they would prefer the gift of a clean house. And as opposed to 11% of young adults who would prefer an expensive gift. So it's actually outranks, you know, something pricey as the ideal gift. Well, I'm just throwing it out there. So once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen ahead of the 4th of July holiday. By the way, we're not going to be here. There will be no show next Friday, right, the 5th of July,
right,
because it's kind of like Thanksgiving. We're going to make it a long weekend. So yep. We have things to do, places to go, people to see.
Yes. So, we'll be very, very busy.
As most people will be. So no program next Friday, but ahead of the 4th, this would be the time when we'd be talking about 4th of July recipes anyway. And we have dug into the archives for some oldies but goodies. We have picnic recipes for the 4th.
Yes. So these are always staples for your 4th of July cookouts.
If you're hosting or if you're going to a gathering and have to take something along, these are good standbys.
Easy, perfect recipes.
Exactly. First of all, have a recipe for easy crockpot baked beans.
Yes.
And I guess this is more than just opening the can and putting it in the crockpot.
Yes.
So a little bit more involved than that.
Yes. All Add some flavor.
Okay.
So 2 28-ounce cans of baked beans. Do not drain them. 3/4 cup of ketchup, a half a cup of your favorite barbecue sauce, 1/4 cup of brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of molasses, 1 tablespoon of yellow mustard, 1 tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce, 1/4 teaspoon of garlic powder, and 1/2 cup of finely chopped onions. So place the beans, the ketchup, barbecue sauce, sugar, molasses, mustard, the sauce. I said it right the first. I said it right the first time.
Close.
Okay. Chopped onion and garlic powder into the crock pot. Stir to combine, then place the lid on the crock pot. Cook on low for 5 to 6 hours or high for 3 to 4 hours and enjoy.
The easy crock pot baked beans with the Worcestershire sauce.
Yes, yes. And the molasses. That was your mom's staple.
Yeah, that's the secret ingredient right there.
Just makes it. It just gives it a great flavor.
There you go.
Adding that molasses.
We also have a recipe for a potato salad.
Yes.
All right.
So 2 pounds of potatoes, peeled and diced, 7 hard boiled eggs, chopped, 1 cup of mayo, 1 teaspoon of yellow mustard, 4 tablespoons of sweet pickle relish, or if you like the dill pickle relish. I like the dill pickle relish.
Okay.
And salt and pepper to taste. So place the diced potatoes into a large stock pot, cover them with water, and bring them to a boil for about 15 minutes or until tender. Drain in a colander. Run cold water over them to stop the cooking process and refrigerate for an hour or so. While those are cooling down, place the mayonnaise, the mustard, the relish, the salt and pepper in a medium bowl. Mix until well combined. Add the potatoes and mix gently, and then refrigerate until ready to serve. And enjoy.
All right. So along with the Easy Crock-Pot Baked Beans, the potato salad, have a dessert recipe because gotta have dessert.
Yes.
And what could be better than an easy cherry pie?
Yes. Yeah. So cherry pie, it's like a staple for the 4th of July. It's like you gotta have cherry pie.
Of course.
So you have 2 unbaked pie crusts, 2 cans of cherry pie filling, 1 teaspoon of almond extract, and milk and sugar. So preheat your oven to 425 degrees. Place one of your pie crusts into your deep dish pie plate. Press it into the bottom and sides of the plate. Then pour the can of pie filling into a mixing bowl and add your almond extract and mix that up. Pour the filling into the pie plate. And then I added some extra cherries. So I chopped up some sweet cherries that I got in the produce.
Some like fresh cherries.
Some fresh cherries.
So you've got the cans of cherry pie filling, and then you're adding cherries even beyond that.
If you want more. If you don't, then don't.
If you want more cherries, the bottom line, what you're saying is you can never have too many cherries.
That's right.
In your pie.
Cherry pie.
Is what you're saying.
Love it.
Okay.
So then lay the remaining pie crust on a large cutting board or directly onto your counter. I do a little bit of flour, and then you can use a cookie cutter, make little stars or whatever to make your top of your pie look pretty. So,
you want to at least slit the top.
Yeah, so, or you can do basket weave, or you can however fancy you want to make it. Completely up to you. The other thing you can do is displace the top crust on top, kind of cut your edges, and then make that look pretty, and then just cut some slits.
Okay.
And whatever is easiest for you. And then you're going to brush the top with milk, sprinkle with some sugar, bake the crust until golden brown, about 40 to 45 minutes. And if you need to, after 15 minutes or so, if you see that your edges are getting a little darker than you want, then you can take it out and put like a little pie crust protector, or just take some foil and put it around the edges.
All right.
For me, I don't do that. I like crispy, golden, dark golden brown edges of my pie.
All right.
So, but completely up to you with the aluminum foil or the pie shield, and then cool for at least an hour before serving. The filling will set after it cools. So it may be a little runny. It's no big deal. It will, once it cools, it'll set.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
Very good.
There you go. The easy crockpot baked beans, the potato salad, and the easy cherry pie.
Yes.
We say easy. You can make it as easy as or as complex as you want.
Correct. Completely up to you. There.
All right.
Yes.
So those recipes for the 4th of July, typical staples for your 4th of July picnic or gathering or cookout, whatever it is, those are posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. So follow that if you don't already. And you can find that link if you can't remember that. Go to goodmornings.net and we've got the link posted there as well. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Once again, that is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, do you know a hero who had the courage and compassion to step up and step in to help someone in an emergency? Not for the recognition, but because it was the right thing to do. Well, the Red Cross wants to give them the recognition that they are due. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.